So, we're coming off from Pesach, and we're heading in towards Shavuos. And there is so much in between, correct? And I would like to elaborate on something that I shared a little bit Shabbos. I think many of us have this challenge in whichever words we choose to use, or how the challenge presents itself could be different, but the challenge is the same. And what happened was is that someone spoke to me last week, someone who was a suffering Jew who was wronged, and he wanted to understand, why are we celebrating Pesach, Yitzias Mitzrayim? He said, I believe that God made miracles and there were the plagues and we had Kriyas Yamsuf, Gevaldik. He says, God put us into Egypt. I think there was an expression that he used, I think it's called Stockholm Syndrome, in which you get a very wrong understanding of what is. And someone who's actually hurting you, you can maybe just to survive develop a certain psychology in which when they give you food they're amazing and you become attached, right? So God took us out of Egypt, okay, true. We don't believe that we have the power to make things really happen. God is the only real power. It's not like I got myself into trouble, right? I got myself into trouble and God saved me. Then it would make sense, right, to be very grateful to God. But if God put me in there and God took me out of there, don't put me in there and don't take me out of there. Good question, right? It's a better question when it's coming from someone's pain. So this is like a discussion is a lot easier to have. And it's important to know how to address this. Anyone have an idea of what to say?
Yeah, I mean, I give my son his iPad, and I also take it away. But because I know that if I let him, he would watch iPad till like his eyeballs fell out. It's not bad that I take it away from him.
Another idea.
So what you are saying is that because of God being good, and because of what we perceive to be difficult is really for our good, that resolves it.
Maybe the Jews also, I don't want to say deserved being there, but didn't the brothers do certain events that led them to be exiled?
Okay. What you're saying, mm-hmm. that we had our part in it, is very true, but cannot be said to someone who is suffering.
Oh, for sure.
Like real. And what are you telling them? That, well, you got yourself into trouble.
No, I was just looking at the gods.
I know. In other words, it's an easy topic to discuss. It's very difficult to know what to say and how to say. I'm not saying that I have the answer for it, but let me just share what happened. It was like Hashgacha Pratis. What happened was, is that Alexander Sasha Trufanov, who was one of the hostages that was released relatively recent, not the ones that were released early. He was, I think, 498 or something like that days. Imagine 498 days in a tunnel. And the Kfar Chabad magazine, now he was a person that was not from a religious family at all. Russian, not Jewish. From Jewish. Israeli, unfortunately, in Israel, unlike America, I will tell you, in Israel, the seculars, there is luggage there. There is an animosity there. In the meanwhile, this has to be resolved. So he came from a very not religious, not open. He speaks about certain biases that were put into him that he was shocked that were not true. Just on the side, like Anyways, he's a person now that he wears a yarmulke. He's putting on tefillin every day. When he went to meet Putin, he went there with his yarmulke. You know, it's not a yarmulke in shul. He's a Jew. And how did he get there? So on the side, he had a lot of questions, theological questions. He was just shocked that when he asked them to Rabbi Lazar, how there was a dialogue. He didn't even care whether the answer was the right answer or the wrong. He thought that you're not allowed to ask any questions, like the one that I just asked, because it's like blasphemous. Like, what are you doing? That, and for him, that was the most moving thing. He says, wow, you guys allow me to ask? He didn't even need the answer. Just on the side, and this is important for our children, etc. This is a big thing. We should not be afraid of questions, and we don't need to have the answers. It doesn't bother me. It should bother someone if you don't ask. If you're not asking, that means you don't care. Or some other dysfunction that's much worse than not having an answer. Big deal. Ultimately, no one has the answer. We all know that. But still, we try to chop as much as we could. But let me come back to his story. So the Kfar Chabad article is titled, I read it in English, it was a translation, almost verbatim of the Hebrew, of how I found God in a terror tunnel. So he's describing an experience. This is not a question and an answer in a book we're opening up. And he was describing how, first of all, on October 7th, he was wounded more than most. He physically is very impressive. He's very big. He's very muscular. He's like 6'2". He's like a tall Jew. He writes on the side later that he was with many people that were chained for months. Like, how can you stay normal? They were not only in a tunnel. Some of them were in cages. He says the reason why he was not subjected to that, now, he paid a price for that. He was shot in both of his legs. He had a horrible body injury, and one of his shoulders were dislocated. So he was such a pile of bones and blood and mess. And he says, for him, on the side, for him, if he would have been chained down, he says he wouldn't have been who he is right now. It would have done something to him psychologically. It would have broken something in him from which you can't recuperate. You have to just go on living broken. Now, to some degree, everyone lives broken, but there's many levels to that. That would have been a level that he's grateful, but that's on the side. That's like, now, even a bad thing is for a good thing. That was not the message that he was saying at all. That we know that has been done already, too many times already. What he said is like this. He says, first, he began to feel himself going into despair. Despair is, how do we say despair in Ivrit? Yiyush. Yiyush, which is bad, because you know, people understand that this is not working or that's not working, horrible. I don't know, somewhere deep down, hope. In Portuguese, we say that hope is that which dies last. It's a simple people, but there's a gavaldika truth. In other words, there are many, 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 many layers. Even when people say, I gave up hope, you know why they're telling you they gave up hope? I'm telling you why, because they have hope. Because if they wouldn't have hope, they wouldn't tell you they gave up hope. So there is something about what God put in us which is really amazing. So he writes like this. He says that he felt himself slipping into this. These are young people. He was taken, 27. He was freed when he was 29. I think there's a big difference. Also the age, every age deals with it different. This is it's tragic, but it's interesting. So he says, I felt myself slipping into despair. And with the knowledge that there'll be a point from which I will not come back.
It's not surprising. It's surprising otherwise.
Yeah. So listen to his experience. He says he began to observe how there is something there that is completely beyond all human control. His, the captors, that is involved in what's happening. He saw an invisible hand that we call God, Hashgacha Pratis. And he says, I experienced, this is not, you see, it's a whole different thing to talk about what we believe in. And we're speaking about a real experience, this is a journey. And he experienced how this power this influencer is giving him something. And what was it giving me? It was giving me. And he's trying to understand, what am I receiving? This mamish sounds like a psychedelic trip. Listen, this is in a horrible setting. He says this power was giving him, he says, the insight that mentally I'm being gifted freedom. I want to explain to you what that means to me, because certain circumstances, there comes a point where a human being cannot handle that type of pressure. It's not a given. You can't say, yeah, we always have freedom what to think about. I don't think that's true. I think every person has their breaking point in which, if this and this and that is all going on at the same time against you, you lose your mind. Your mind is taken. He and his mind was being taken. His despair, he had yush, that's worse than the mind. He felt his soul going into despair. And he was felt that there's some, whatever it is that's managing, is giving him freedom of mind to make a choice. He says, I have to make a choice. I have to make a choice to give up my mind or to experience freedom in my mind. And that, this is something that I read. It's so gewaldic. And he says, in that freedom, I found happiness. What an experience. And he came to understand that the power that was giving him and that was managing everything is what we call God. There was a big Rebbe, the Kloisenberger Rebbe, who passed away, I think in the 90s, not that long ago, depending how old you are. He, Rabbi Yekusiel Yehuda Halberstam, was married. His wife's name was Chana. He had 11 children before the war. He was a Rebbe in the old world. That means he was a very spiritual person. 11 kids, I want to tell you something, is a very large family. I'm saying that on purpose because one of the innovations of the Rebbe, we're speaking about 1950, when the Rebbe became Rebbe, was to promote having what we would call a Lubavitcher-sized family. That used to mean a dozen kids or around in that number. That was not the norm, I want you to know. You have to read. That was because of the fact that there was a Holocaust. And we needed to replenish the Jewish people. I'm saying this on the side because it's a side topic, but I think it's a controversial topic, but who cares? I'm going to say it and then let it be what it is, that many parents cannot handle 12 kids. And mamish, they and the kids pay a price for sure. And I'm putting a context into this promotion of having large families, 12 kids, 14 kids, 16 kids. This was common. When I was in yeshiva, my chaverim were from these families. I don't know about you. The world that I know in Lubavitch doesn't have these numbers of children. I'm not saying this as a good thing, God forbid, or as a bad thing either. I'm just observing. Before the war, families were not of these numbers. It wasn't that forever the Shruma people had 12 kids. It's not true. It didn't work that way. I know many families, people that we know. I want to mention the name, but I'm being recorded because it's so cute that at this point, I think they have four or five. I'm talking about from the father's perspective. He says he can have another 12 because it makes no difference. Because the type of joy that's going on in the home and the way parents, in a great way, in a complimentary way, deal with it, this is special. For me, it's not the common. What the heck? It's okay anyway. Yeah, but I want to say that in this home, it's a beautiful home. These are good kids. These are not kids that are neglected. Now, everyone is different. Some people, are very organized. So when things get chaotic, they go crazy. And again, I'm not comparing the story with Gaza, but there comes a point where you lose your mind. You lose your mind. And I'm saying this, I know I'm laughing because I'm not in there. But just to be mindful of how much you can handle. When people overextend themselves, you know, having kids is a little bit more controversial. Think about having kids because there's no greater, this is the biggest accomplishment. This is our wealth. But when it comes b'chlal in life, I think when people get older, they realize that younger people overextend themselves. And everyone loses. Like less is more is so true. In everything. How many people do I know that when they had their smaller home, people that were able to afford a larger home, it wasn't the financial. I don't know. They said it was better. It was better. When the current anti-Semitic president of Brazil, Lula, real enemy of the Jewish people, Mamish, he came from such a primitive background that his wife, Maria, I'll call her, like she was a housemaid. Nothing wrong with that. But when he won the first time the presidency in Brazil and they went into the presidential palace, she stopped. She says, there are too many windows to wash. Mamish, like her understanding of, this is our new home. I don't want to live in this home because I don't want to wash all these windows. And you think about it, it's primitive, but it's so good because the more you have, the more you have to manage. You know, this is, we all know that. But wait, is it worth it? Of course, it's worth it to have more and to have bigger and to have nicer. You're going to pay a price. And is that price worth it? And who will be paying the price? Sometimes I have the right to pay a price for me because God gave me some ownership over me. I don't have a right to have my children pay a price. It's not right. It's not ethical. So if I'll become a more nervous person, if I'll become a less generous person, et cetera, this is not about me. Unless you're single, we're speaking about people that are at a point in life, and everyone, even if a person is not yet married, you have siblings, you have workplace, you have v'chulei v'chulei. So I just got off on a tangent. I want to try to make my way back over here. So this Jew had 11 kids, a big deal, and listen, what happened to him, I know, was not only to him, but you think about a person, everyone got murdered, everyone. And what really hurt him the most is that after the war, he had one son. The eldest son survived. He did not know that he survived. The Kloisenberger Rebbe's elder son survived. And he passed away a few weeks after the war in a DP camp. So you imagine when he hears a story that your son lived, but he died. And he went ahead and he managed to make it to the Holy Land. And he got remarried and he had 7 children. And he continued the Kloisenberger Chassidus, and he founded Laniado Hospital. That's very unique, you know, for a Rebbe, for a Chassidish Rebbe, because of the suffering of the Holocaust. A hospital, I know, in every big city, the best hospital is built by Jews. We should be very proud of that. In São Paulo, the biggest hospital of Latin America, Albert Einstein has a mezuzah on every door. Like Cedars. Now, here in LA, you have who knows how many, can I know how to Ken Yirbu, hundreds of thousands of Jews, very affluent. Also, Kiddush Hashem. We have the best hospital in LA, we, the Jewish people. Think about that. We're very small. We're 0.0, we're nothing. But at least in LA, there are many. In São Paulo, we're nothing. It's a city of, I think, 20 million people. You know how big that is? There are 60,000 Jews, there are 70,000 Jews. Think about that. But that's a Jewish thing. Normally, in the religious world, we focus on schools, mikvahs, rightfully so. He built a hospital. And at some point, someone met him and he asked him, how do you do this? How do you do it? And he said something connected to this week's parsha. I know almost everyone over here. Many of us have sons. And by a bris, it's a beautiful sign. This parsha is the parsha of a bris milah. We give a bracha after the bris. First, we make a bracha over the wine. We give a bracha, like we do by every mitzvah. A side of the bracha that's made right before the bris. Right there's the bracha, and then there's the baby naming. And most people miss the beauty of that. It's a statement. Because everyone wants to hear the name, and once they hear the name, everyone is happy then thinking about the name. But after the name is given, there's another couple of lines that we read. And amongst those lines, we quote a pasuk from Yechezkel. It says in Yechezkel, and this pasuk is in reference to the leaving of Egypt. It says like this, V'evoid olayach. On my Ashkenazi Hebrew, I'm going to say it in your thing, I'll forget the verse by heart. V'evoid olayach, God says, and I will pass you over. I'm going to go by you. Not pass you over in a bad way. It's like God says in the future tense, I'm going to walk by you. V'erech, and I'm going to see you. And what will I see? It's amazing. Even though this happened many years ago, but God is saying that you are being misboiseses. This is very Ashkenazic pronunciation with samachs, bidomayach, which means I see you wallowing in your blood. People think in LA that we're wallowing in misery. They love it. No, this is better. We're better Jews. I'm going to see you wallowing in your blood. Now we're getting bloody. Now, 1 second. What does it mean? Just to know what we're referring to. That when we were in Mitzrayim, God told us to make a carbon Pesach. And it's bloody. Even though people, it sounds nice. We have a steak for those who eat meat. But no, you shecht an animal and you put the blood on your house. The Persians do it with the chickens and everything. But that's also, that's bloody. That's old school. But then there was another blood. There was the blood of a bris milah. Every single Jewish man, boy, adult, everyone did a bris. That's a big deal, I want you to know. Big deal. For an adult to do a bris. In Brazil, the menial of the school, the Rabbi Greenbaum in Brazil, I'll tell you, Rabbi Bigun, he was the Chabad Moel. And the beauty is that all of the kids, when they saw him, they instinctively were afraid of him. They didn't know why. You understand? That's what happens over there. That's interesting. I'm telling you, there's something to that. Him you respect. Don't mess with him. Okay. So we need a bris milah. And the bloods that we put on the doorposts wasn't just from the Korban Pesach. It was bris milah, dan Pesach. So God says that I'm going to pass you by. Like every now and then, like God is far away, God forbid. But there's a certain way of less. It appears to us that he's less involved. But every now and then he's going to take a good look at us. And he looks at the Jewish people. And what does he see? He sees that we're wallowing in our blood. And wallow means to be rolling over. You're splashing around. You're wallowing in your misery. You're in it. You're in your blood. And and God says, and what will I tell you? Not, oh, poor you. Not, oh, I'm going to save you. Oh, it's too much. It's too much. No. That through your blood, you're going to live. You're talking about what you said. Like, oh my God. Like, gevura shebe gevura. B'domaya chayi. No, it's, you're going through something. You need to know that this is the only way to live. And if not this, you wouldn't even live. Do you want to live? B'domaya chayi. So the Kloisenberg, so someone asked him once, how do you do it? So he said, B'domaya chayi. So the Jew, now he was very learned, so he didn't, so he made two words and he understood the background and the depth and he knew a lot more than we know, like there's who knows what's behind that. And the listener also was learned. So the listener says, he says it was rivers of blood. He thought the Kloisenberger Rebbe was saying that the Holocaust was rivers of blood, which it was. How do you do it? So somehow he says that, through the rivers of blood I'm living. First of all, how does that work? He wanted to know how you do it. And he corrected him and he said, no, I didn't mean that, which is beautiful. He said, I meant something else completely. And what did it mean? In last week's Parsha, it says that Vayidoim Aharon, which means that when Aaron had his day in the to shine, the only time, Aaron HaKohen, Moshe Rabbeinu was younger than him, Aaron HaKohen was not chosen to free us, Aaron HaKohen was the insider. Aaron HaKohen was the Jew that suffered with us. Moshe Rabbeinu was born as an outsider. He was raised in the palace. He was a king somewhere in Ethiopia and Africa for 40 years. Moshe Rabbeinu had, Like he was not part of us. He was part of us, but not, he was outside. Aaron HaKohen was not the guy. Finally, it's his day to be the Kohen Gadol. The first day, two of his children died. And no one should know what that is. That losing a child and losing two children and on the same day. Like you read the story, I don't think it affects people because it's so non-relatable, so you can talk about it. But where did I realize that? That I know someone who lost a son. So when he gets to this parsha, he cries. Because he's like, can I? He says, wow, what's going on? And two children died. And what did Aaron do? By Yidoim Aaron. Aaron was quiet. Hold on. So he says, Bidomaye Chayi doesn't mean blood. Yeah, we're wallowing in blood. What gives us life is not the blood, is our reaction towards it, that we're silent. And then he went on to explain to him that there are two opposite types of silence. This is very important to know because we experience both, and we do both. We have to just know what we're doing. There is a silence that comes from weakness, which is fine. We all have weakness. So sometimes someone tells you something and you don't know what to say. And you know that there is a good response, just I don't know what to say. And after the conversation, you already know that 20 minutes later, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot. Why didn't I? Then you begin to fantasize. You do it, at least you make a tikkun. They told me this, and I told them that. And then you applaud yourself. And then you realize, too late, too late. If it would only happen again. Like everyone has some of this fantasy because we feel ashamed of our silence. Because the silence is because I don't have it's answerable. Just I'm not smart enough. If only I would know how to answer. There's a silence of resignation, like the silence of despair. The silence of the depressed person. That's not a good silence. No one lives in that silence. That's the vicious circle silence. The opposite silence. It's a very powerful silence. That's what he told him. And yes, this is connected to what you answered. There are things that are unknowable. And there are certainly a lot of life that are bigger than words. And I don't care how articulate and wise and intelligent a person can be. You put it into words, you made it smaller. Mamish. And we know that. This is our experience. There are certain things in my life, in your life, that are so big. It's not about big good, big bad, good, bad, and any other. It's so big that you cannot, they're not meant to be verbalized. Not because you can't, not because you're not smart. God, we have to give God a name because how else will you know that I will know that we're talking about God is not a name. God is beyond a name. God is not knowable. Mamish. And therefore, God cannot be described. I think the most real parts of every person's life is beyond knowing. They're not knowable. The real things in life. Who your parents are. Start with that. The world that you were born into. Go explain that. It's a fact that we have to surrender to. And any pushing over there is mamash wasting energy. And it's going to take away the energy that God gave you. And we all have limited energy, like limited money. Don't waste money. Even if you're a billionaire, don't waste money. You have something, use it where it counts. Don't burn it. And we all know this. And when we are able to really surrender, because it's a big thing to do that. It's not an easy thing to do. I want to know. I want to understand. Really, I want to manipulate. That's what it is. I want to manipulate. I want to change it. We begin contending. We begin fighting. with that which you cannot change. Like the past. No one here can change the past. I don't care what you do. And many people will spend almost their whole life trying to change the past. Can't. Vayidoim, that silence was Aaron's silence. Aaron understood, this is not all of life. I went back to this, Trufanov knew he has a place where he's needed to show up to keep himself sane. He showed up. Not only that, he realized that it's a gift. He mamash felt that there's something giving him somehow, despite the craziness that he was in, can't stand. Forget about you don't see the sunlight. Like, I don't know how he's standing straight. He says he needs a lot of therapy, physical therapy. But he says he felt that he's been given the choice. Like, choose life. When you're young, you read the parsha, choose life. God says, I gave you life and death, choose life. It sounds like nonsense. No, this is like the greatest gift. God is telling us that we will always be gifted by Him in the present. The possibility to choose life. Most of us never needed to make that choice. It was a given. Some people face scenarios where they would rather choose death. But that I need to know that I am able to choose life. That's a gift that God gives, and it's a miracle gift. So that is where I have to make a choice. So I'm not, God forbid, saying to surrender that part of my life that I'm not allowed to surrender, because that's where I have my responsibility. I'm speaking about Aaron lost two sons as a great example. What is he going to do?
I mean, cry. Mourn. Hashem told him you're not even allowed to mourn.
Well, I'm not going to go down that path because he was allowed to cry and mourn.
I mean, it says you can't cut your hair, you can't...
Well, cutting the hair is all external. God told him external things. I don't believe Aaron was doing something without tears, but I don't want to get down that path. Yeah, you legislate external, you cannot legislate internal. Mm-hmm. When you say the word mourning, even mourning, like, we can go off that for a second. We mourn for 7 days. Yeah, come on, what are we, robots? Even the most superficial person knows, what do you mean mourn for 7 days? Mm-hmm. Shiva. Even the beginning of mourning, my brother lost a son. So he's standing by the cave and he looks to me and he tells me, Abraham, something is wrong with me. I'm not crying. But on top of the fact, he began to challenge his humanity. When in reality, feelings are different. You can have a delayed reaction. Shocking events could mamish have a delayed reaction. Like, you have no, like, delayed. Just, we don't know what these events do to people. You can go hysterical now. You can wake up in 3 weeks and finally realize, they say, there's, you know, the five steps, denial. This is not a little thing. It's a deep thing. You can mamish deny. Denial. It's not happening. You detach. But I don't want to go down there. So, Bechlal, Yiddishkeit is always Torah mitzvahs, which is the beginning and the end and the most important. It's all about behavior. We know that. Here in this class, we're talking about Chassidus. Chassidus doesn't, God forbid, take away the chashivas of behavior. That's the beginning and end. That's the beginning and end. And to emphasize that. But there is something, there is another part of life. And Pnimius HaTorah deals with the Pnimius. No, the Pnimius of mourning is never legislated. God told him how to behave, which also has to be explained. But going back to the silence was Aaron's humility and faith, which wasn't words, which were so emesdik that he accepted that which you cannot change. And this guy is writing his experience, this Trufanov, that once he already realized earlier there's nothing he can do. He went into despair because he realized he has no control. He realized two things, not to despair, is that there was someone in control, not the terrorist. He mamish realized it. He says that didn't make sense for him to be alive. And everything, he lived 498 days. And by the laws of, it didn't work. There was something controlling them. So he submitted to that. Then now he's calling that Hashem. But he says he experienced happiness. Listen to his words. Happiness from the freedom that he was gifted. So I shared this article with the person who asked that question about Mitzrayim. Now, yeah, of course, if it would be up to me, I didn't have to respond. Because I don't have a response to him, because Trufanov's hell was worse than his hell. So only someone like that is capable of touching, and it worked. I mamash saw him read it and cry. It hit the nail on the head, not for a theological question with a theological, theoretical answer, for someone's anguish, because at least you have a roadmap. Because to stay focused in, why did you put me into Egypt? Okay, knock yourself out. You are in Egypt. You are there already. You're going to spend 1 ounce of energy. Why am I here? I don't deserve to be here. I do deserve to be here. There's all of that. You're burning your money. You're burning your energy. You have no energy left. You won't be able to get through. When you have a challenge, you got to preserve your energy. He realized. And then when you found a freedom, that he was a gift. And that was a gift. Because without God giving him that koyach, like we learn in Chassidus, God creates every instant. He felt that. He felt that every day God is giving him the koyach of making the choice of remaining sane. And then he was happy with the freedom he has to make that choice. And Vayidamaran, the Kloisenberger Rebbe, how did you do what you did? Because he really accepted what happened. Not because it's for the good, not because it's for a punishment. No, he didn't even go there. He didn't go there. He didn't go there because it's beyond. What are you going to do? And that leads us into another big point that I just want to share one more story, and then I want to go on from there because I have a good message from this. Just another similar story where it's a choice of perspective, how to react when there's a lot of bad and a little good. Logically, you can tell, a person can say, let me make it fair. I'll react to everything. And therefore, if there's more bad than good, then my reaction should be that Manus Friedman, Rabbi Manus Friedman, the last time I heard him live here, even though he came here afterwards, he shared like two stories that were so good. And one of them was that when he moved to Minneapolis, to Minnesota, he was the third Chabad Shliach there. And a few weeks, was the first Shabbos Mevarchim. Shabbos Mevarchim is when in Lubavitch, in Chabad, we have a minhag to say the whole Tehillim before davening. Minhag Chabad, once a month, Shabbos Mevarchim. It's only Chabad. And he wanted, and ideally you're supposed to do it with a minyan, for the men. He wanted a minyan. So there was three shluchim. He was number three. Who's going to do? He says that then when he got there, there was one Orthodox shul. One that was comprised of old men. Huh? Minneapolis. Saint Paul. Simcha Paul. And amongst the old timers, there were two brothers that they were Polish Holocaust survivors. And he says from the shul, they were like still in it. They were elderly, but they were not. They had a good vibe. They had a vibe of a young vibe. So older people, yeah, you're going to tell them to do something, not to do something. They're nervous people. We made a seder, Chabad of Pickford and Chabad of Solon made a seder in the old age home. Let me tell you something. Whoever will be a next Pesach should join us. I'm just going on because it's so meaningful. You have to prepare your kids. It's not what you think of a seder. First of all, this thing that everyone knows of, it's free. People can come. They cannot come. The people that are there. So like 20-some people are there. They're there by choice. Many of them came from homes where they did the Seder. I would say probably all of them. Right next to my son, Simcha, there was an old man. He was so angry. He says, first you serve the food. Like these jokes, like I experienced it. Like what's with this? He says, okay, serve the food. He says, this is wrong. He says, we're elderly people. He says, you don't come and give me a whole, like all of these comedies you watch. And he was so angry. And what he did was in his anger, and they become like childlike, including, I'll be the same way. I'm not laughing at him. I'm laughing at my future me. Is that he ate up every item of the thing. And then he left in protest loud. So that was one parsha.
Then you have, he'll be there next year.
Oh, for sure. I'm saying just the whole thing. Huh? I don't know where he was from. It was so, it was almost comical. Very big. And then you had the elderly woman. Oh, she was the happy one. She was talking, like you have all these characters, that's all of us, but there's no, when you get older, you lose your restraints. That's what happens to all of us. You don't care. So you see, the bitter people become the worst people in the world. The happy people, happy, freilach. And you have the people that are sina, then people that are in middle. I don't remember you. Do you remember me? Almost with tears. Mamush, that. And you say, yeah, of course I remember you, and they're happy. At least you remember me. Imagine, I don't remember you. I don't know who you are. But do you know who I am? Wow. Like that. Like all of that. You have all this at the basachas. And then I had my einakach running around. It made it normal. You have a seder. And it's in the chametz facility. You don't ask me. Hopefully everything is kosher. Because nothing is kosher there. So the food is brought then. And everything is covered with tablecloths, and yeah. Tony and his brother and his uncle and everyone, the whole chevra there.
This is your second year doing it?
Second year, it's so good. Anyways, what am I saying about older people? I got off tangent. Just about
Minneapolis.
Oh, so I'm saying old, huh?
You made the Seder right here in the
and Pico and Crescent Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You brought the food there.
We already did a second. Yeah, we're experts. We know how to get in there already. We know how to do the whole thing. Wow. We're there at Rishus, of course. Many Jews are there. Jews with black hats are there. A Jew with a shtreimel is there.
No way.
And there's no, they have no family with them.
Where are their parents? Where are their
parents? That's a kasha. Every case is like, I don't think it's a big city. Every case. Yeah. Many people were not present. Many people were mentally not fully present.
Sometimes they need the aids and like nurses and stuff.
No, not sometimes. All of them.
Yeah,
all of them.
They need the aids.
Yeah. It's not. In other words, it's not. No, don't judge so quick. What? It's a peckle.
Yeah.
And there's a comedy in it, especially if you know them, you would cry. But if you don't know them,
say that the kids got the kids saying someone is wearing a strong one, they really need kosher. What are you eating there?
I'm sure they serve kosher food. I'm talking about the facility. I'm sure they serve kosher food. Yeah. Let me make that. I'm happy. That's a good correction. I'm sure. Has to be. Yeah. Fruma people. Oh, a couple of years ago, there was a Jew connected to the shul. That someone called me up. He says my father is here. He says he never missed filling in his life. And he came to the point where he was not, in other words, he moved in here with his tefillin, he began to lose his mind. So we made a rotation from the shul. Every day, someone else went over there, we put on, until he passed away for a long time. In other words, they provide services. I'm saying, I don't know what they do for chametz, this I don't know, because it was, all the food that stayed there, we left there. Expensive food, I told them, we're not taking anything back. Because if you're not supervising it, yeah. Your mama's gonna. In the kitchen, in the back, there was a pile of sandwiches. The whole thing was comic. Like you're talking about b'dikas chametz, b'dikas chametz. In the same kitchen, Tony is there. There was because for the next thing, nice tasty sandwiches, geschmacka sandwiches. What can I tell you? Like oh my God, you know a mashgiach doesn't give a hashgach if they serve milchiks and fleishiks from the same kitchen. Like this was worse.
This was Pesach.
This was Pesach. Okay, anyways, where am I getting at? I'm getting at that. So from older people, at least, you know, some older people, they're still with it. And they have, you can talk to them. So there was two brothers. One of them was called Yidel Yehuda. So he tells Yidel, my name is Rabbi Manas Friedman. And he says that we have a minig to say Tehillim Shabbos Mevarchim. Before he can continue, he said, why? No, he just said, because in Lubavitch, the Friedrich Rebbe. No. Why only Shabbos Mevarchim? That's what he said. So Rabbi Manas says, what do you mean, why only? The whole Tehillim. He says, my brother and I, he said it humbly, my brother and I say the whole Tehillim every single week. So Manas tells him, why? Like, why would you do that? So he said like this. He says that he was 3 years in a camp with his brother because the Polacks had it the worst because Hitler invaded Poland first in 1939. 3 years. He says, and when they liberated us, the Russian soldiers announced, you're free to go home. And he says, that was the knife in my heart. He says, I walked to the gate and I looked at my brother and we did not want to walk out because we had no home. We didn't go home.
Go home to what?
So we're frozen there. And he says, in the distance, we noticed a Polish woman with a big basket of bread, bilkalach. She came to the camp and she handed each one of us a roll of bread. And he says, I looked at my brother. My brother looked at me. And he says, we asked, how can we thank God for this kindness? And we decided, we made a vow that we're going to say Tehillim for the rest of our life every single Shabbos. Think about it. So you have people, I told this to this guy that spoke to me, after he read the article, that you can argue 3 years in a camp, no home to go to, roll of bread. So it's like a choice. It's a choice. You have the right to choose. You have the right to choose. And you won't be wrong if you were choose to be bitter for the 3 years. And I would go further. I would say that without God's help, maybe you don't even have a choice. Maybe the bitter person was not even given the choice. I don't know. But when you witness a person, it's a choice. That which I can't change, I surrender. And we can learn that in our lives. Our lives are not dramatic, thank God. But in everyone, every person, if you want to look at it through the right lens, yeah, when we have to be careful not to surrender to something that we could change. We have to be very careful of that. But when we don't use energy for that which cannot be changed, you know how much happier we would be? That's what Trufanov was saying. He says he experienced joy. Because joy is a reaction. Joy is a reaction either simple, younger, from external, and gesundheit, you know, when many things around you are going good. You look at your kids, you feel happy. Amen to all of us, gesundheit. There is a joy that comes from an internal, something internal. And the internal, there's a lot of power there. That's where we really have the power. That when I look at the internal, and not to things the way they are. That which cannot be changed, if I learn to accept faith, definitely humility. You cannot do this without humility because some of the things that you can't change are really not fair or they're driving you crazy. And you can go shout. Because like they say in Yiddish, enjoy it. If that makes you happy, do it. At least be happy you got to shout. But it's not going to help. And then you focus on that which you have power in. Before you even exercise the power, you can have simcha from that. You can have simcha from, wow, this is what I could do. I'm free to do this and not behind that lament. You see how limited I became. Can't do this, I can't do that. Well, fine. After be'emes, vayidoim, you acquiesce. Where am I getting at? I'm getting to something very important. It's getting late. That the difference that Chassidus explains, and that's the void of Sfiras HaOmer, of Mitzrayim and the redemption of Mashiach, which is about to happen, and this is important, is that in Egypt, we only celebrated leaving Egypt when we left Egypt. And even though we made a Seder in Egypt, I know that, but they were after 9 Makkas, and we were already free people. Now, freedom, you can only really be liberated or be redeemed or be transformed or have your Geula if you learn how to have your Geula inside the Golos. Trufanov.
Inside the
goals? Inside the affliction.
Okay.
Inside the exile. In other words, in a very immature world, mm-hmm. It's very simple. Either it's good or it's bad. Like I feel restraint and I need to get out. This guy needed to get out. For 490 days needed to get out. But he somehow came to a place where he felt free inside the tunnel. Freedom in what God gave him freedom on that day, which was to watch over his mind, that his mind should not go in a direction where whatever is will become magnified. To choose what to think about. Inner freedom we always have, but it's very difficult. But if a person is able and we are able to find our freedom inside the oppression, That's the coming of Mashiach, and that's why, just as an example, in Lubavitch and Chabad, we have a Seudas Mashiach, and people misunderstand it. People think Seudas Mashiach is only about now Mashiach is coming, and then when Mashiach doesn't come, we have a misunderstanding. We say, oh, how horrible! It's not fair. I had such a good, I really, really, really believed. No, you didn't, but that, I don't want to go there. I really, okay, that you really believed, and still I'm being let down again. It's almost part of Judaism is to be frustrated. No, no. It's that we experienced a Mashiach moment while we're still in Golos. That has to happen. It doesn't matter. Listen to the idea. Because apply this not to the big Mashiach, apply this to you. In other words, there is that which we want to be freed from. Everyone has their own yearning for freedom. Every person is journeying to the Holy Land. What's your Holy Land? I don't know, none of my business. I'm saying, but think about where you want to get. So the easier way, the amateur way, is to celebrate when you get there, to be there when you're there. We did that already in the past. We were in Egypt, and then we left Egypt. What has to happen now is that whatever we understand about Mashiach, we have to begin celebrating that now. The Rebbe was saying that. Like, open your eyes and see that it's here. The Rebbe would tell, the women told the Rebbe, they're making a Malava Malka, and they're going to serve the Shar Habar and the Leviyasim. Good. What does that mean? You have to get out before you get out. We have to learn, this is a big thing, how to get out from Mitzrayim before you get out. Because if you can only experience getting out when you're out, you're very vulnerable. You might be put back in. That's what happened to us. We got out, then we got back in. We get Geula, Galus, Beis HaMikdash, no Beis HaMikdash. There's no end to that. We are able to come to a place of Geula inside the Galus. Not delusional, not 24/7, but I can have a Geula moment. With the knowledge that I might fall right back. That's all of us. I got someplace, then I fell back. Okay. First of all, when you get someplace, be humble. No, you're going to fall. But on the other hand, understand what's happening. That I managed to take one little step ahead, which is hopefully what happened throughout Pesach. We got somewhere. We had a deeper understanding of freedom. Hopefully experienced. I might take a step back. Yeah, inside my craziness, I have a moment of Geula, and another moment of Geula, and another moment of Geula. You have to find God in the terror tunnel. Not finding God because you were taken out of the terror tunnel. Because then the kasha would be, why are you celebrating? Don't put me in there. Don't take me out of there. Don't bother me. Just let me be. No, it's because in Mitzrayim, he had Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's what this Jew experienced in Mitzrayim. How great is that? 3,000 years ago, that's not what happened. And that's a big thing. That's eternal. And that's why in the Parsha Bris, one of the things that we say after the Bris is Keshem Shenichnas LeBris, right? Just like you entered into the covenant, Ken Yekones LeToira LeChupa LaMasam Toivim. What's the three connected to Bris? Bris is eternal. Bris is an external a Bris, but you can't undo the Bris. No, there's a freedom. If my freedom is contingent on anything external, my freedom could be taken away from me. And not only it can be, it will be, and that's life. And there's nothing wrong when externally things are wonderful, amen for every Jew. But the joy, for joy to be permanent and not dependent, it has to be coming from, at least also, hopefully primarily from, something inner. And it has to be coming from something inner that does not change. That's a bris. It's forever. It's consistent. It is. It's a geula shalema. You don't go back from there. Same thing, our commitment to Torah, the Jews' commitment to Torah. We don't realize it is so, it's eternal. Look at us. Look at the Jewish people. Look at your family. We're eating kosher. Think about that. For thousands of years, it's there. It can be better, but it's there. When people get married, what's the desire of marriage? It should be chuppah, it should be forever. It's not maybe sometimes this one, the next one. You're married to that person forever. That the good things that we do is consistent. Today I'm a good person, tomorrow I'm a bad person. We don't want to be there. And that can only happen, I'm going back to Geula, to freedom. Freedom has to be experienced inside jail. No one has to go to jail. We are already there. Don't worry. Nothing worse is happening. It already happened. You just understand that.
So what are we choosing in that?
You're choosing to focus on that which you have power to choose over, Shoshana. And this is very personalized. I don't know what it is for you.
An action or an emotion?
It can be anything. It's not just what you can choose. It's together with you really, really letting go of that which you cannot. Not spending nothing for that. It's not worth your time.
Right. So if you're in a painful situation, right, you're supposed to feel your pain, right, in order to let it go, right?
I'm not talking about the lack. You don't. If you say you're supposed to feel the pain, then the pain that you feel is already faked. You'll feel what you feel.
Right.
Feelings are not supposed to be anything. They are what they are.
So in that moment, when you're feeling
whatever it is that you're feeling, whatever it is that is.
Is that a moment of choice?
The pain is not a choice, but in that moment of pain, you have a lot of choice.
But then how can you feel pain and get past the pain or actually let the pain go through you?
I'm not speaking about the goal of getting past pain. That's another, how do you get past the pain?
We're talking in that moment, like what are you supposed to do? Like surrender.
If you surrender, thank you.
Pain?
To what is, to what is.
Now it is, but you're giving me
together, like, together with the surrender, you have to start looking for that which you have power over. Because when you surrender to even to God and you become completely powerless, I don't think it's going to be healthy for you. You're surrendering to that which you cannot change, and you're looking for what does God want from me right now? Where's my freedom? Where's me? Surrender is the opposite of me. The opposite.
In the moment.
The
terrorist is standing over your head and beating you. That's with a gun. No, God forbid. This is what these people were experiencing. He's bleeding. He's on the floor. He's in a terror tunnel. He's in pain. At that moment,
at the moment he did not go into the details of his torture, but he felt one of the consequences of the pain. The consequence was he felt he's losing his mind. No. I'm saying, doesn't happen like this. This is an experience. So at some point he realized that something is giving him, no matter what happened to him, no one can imagine what happened. They were tortured, medieval tortures, what they did to these people. He always felt that he's been given the choice of remaining sane. Just start with that. And the knowledge, this is a journey. The fact that he has that choice gave him a lot of joy. See?
I guess my question is technical. Is it happening in the moment, or do you make that choice after when you're thinking?
I think it's a process.
Prepared.
It happens. I think it can happen afterwards, and it can happen before, and it can happen during, and then you do it, and then you undo it, then you lose it, then you get it. It's a process. It's a process. All of these things are a process. But when you get out of it, he got somewhere. And he found God in there. That was his message. I found God in. He didn't find God in the redemption. That answers this guy's question. I didn't want to say all these words because he was coming from a place of pain. In other words, if God put me in Egypt, Egypt is horrible. And then God took me out. I'm celebrating the out. You have a kasha. No. God, he was free while he was in there. He found God in there. He was joyful in there. He says he experienced moments of joy in there. From the gift of the freedom, which is empowering, of choosing, the freedom of choice, of choosing to stay sane, and he succeeded. How gavalic is that?
So he like chose the one thing he had control over.
That's right. And he used all of his energy for that because he gave up the rest.
Because he knew he had zero control.
Because he had zero control.
So it's kind of the concept of radical acceptance.
Radical acceptance compounded with radical responsibility. Because I'm sure that the effort that he needed to make to stay sane was a lot of effort. So that's a good point you're making. In other words, it's both together.
Yeah.
It's both together. You accept what you can change. The AA prayer, but you do it together. And you use your power. You have power. Use it where it counts.
So like I'm accepting accepting fully, but also I understand that I still have this.
And you have responsibility, and you do it.
Yeah.
The joy, he says, the joy came from the gift that he has power.
Wow.
That's not a theology. That's just, it's like, this guy is saying, this is what happened to me. Are you a person like us? That means that we have it in us. Very inspiring to see how it works or how it could work.
It's the same thesis as, I forgot, man's search for meaning?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what that sort of, like, I mean, he kind of coined it.
Well, he was giving, yeah.
Man's a global therapist, and he was also, in the Holocaust, he found that nobody can control his mind, and that's where he found his
joy. He found, that's, there you go. Truth is, no one can ever control our mind. They can make that impression. But we choose.
Well, it shows how powerful your mind is.
Which shows how powerful, and for the bad also. That means that we, somewhere deep, the destructive part of us that wants to destroy ourselves, uses our mind to hurt ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it's very common that people are going to think about the traumatic experience. Why are they doing it? When it happened, someone hit me on the head with a hammer. Then, why am I thinking about it now? I aligned with my oppressor, for whatever reason, to hurt me. Right. And we have that. We should just know that we all have within us a desire to hurt ourselves. Doesn't mean that guy is going to hell. But and it's, that gets, when you get very deep, we have less and less power, just to say that. But people can get there at some point. And if they can't get there yet, there are higher levels, simpler levels, less deep levels that they have power over.